The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 338. I hope everybody's having a fantastic week and ready for a great weekend to play guitar. But today, I guess for now, tonight, this afternoon, this morning, wherever you are, we're going to be talking about guitars and everything that's guitar. Before I get started, as always, I just want to point out that if you see somebody with a blue name and a wrench, they're a moderator, so they can help me moderate the channel, and they can also send me messages in case I'm missing something. Sometimes I catch them, sometimes I don't, but at least it adds another little layer there. And as always, I want to thank the patrons and the members, the channel members on YouTube, which are in green, because they're the sponsors of this. All 338 episodes are fan-funded, so I appreciate you guys so much. Because it's just, I think it's unheard of at this level. I don't know. Maybe I don't know, but I don't know. It feels amazing and different and cool. Okay. So let's get into it. We have so many things to talk about this week. So many subjects. As you guys know, if you want to get a question to me, please start with a question mark first here. If I catch it or if I find it interesting, I'll grab it. You can super chat. Sometimes it throws it right in my face too. That's great too. Obviously, another way, if you don't want to do either one of those, you can email them to the knowyourgearpodcast.com website. You go there and it sends it to me and we filter those and look for good questions too. Again, we're just looking for something fun that you guys may want to talk about that you guys find interesting. And then, of course, early risers, people who come a little early and drop a question first, I always try to grab those. The first one came from last week. We actually have to grab last week. I missed a question last week from Mr. S. And it was, and a super chat for last week, and I'll be grabbing that this week too. That's another thing about super chats. They don't go anywhere. I have them archived. Mr. S says, any updates on modular guitars like the Relish, the J, is it J-Rock? It's J-Y, J-Rock? G-Rock guitar, and of course, the Somnium and others. Updates like, is there any more modular guitars? So modular guitars, what he's asking about is guitars that, where you see me on the Somnium guitar, where you can load in pickups and stuff. I saw a new guitar that was interesting where they didn't look like they're infringing on Somnium's copyrights, but it's so close and a little bit different, maybe improved, because that's the whole point, maybe to improve it. I haven't seen much. Look, the G-Rock guitar, if I'm saying it right, it's J-Y rock guitar. That's one where they're slot machines where they spin. I really don't get that guitar, okay? I appreciate them as builders. I appreciate people who try to innovate. I think, you know, they got passion, and I'm saying that because, again, like, you know, before I insult your mother's cooking, I'm going to say, you know, she's a wonderful woman and she put a lot of work into it. So, because that's just the nice thing to do. After saying the nice things, which is, like I said, I think they obviously know what they're doing and they seem like great people. I don't really get a $10,000 guitar that only lets me put single coil size pickups just for the ability to spin them, you know, and rotate different pickups on the fly. I don't need to rotate a pickup on the fly. I really don't. I've never been in a situation, and I have, as you know, an insane amount of pickups, and I have a modular guitar that lets me eject and loading pickups within seconds. I've never like been in a situation where like I'm playing the song mid-song and I gotta switch to humbucker to the single coil or switch a pickup mid-song. So to me, if I can swap it, you know, I'm not even in between songs. To me, it's more of like, okay, tonight's humbuckers. For this, you know, tonight's single coils, tonight's B90s. So nothing really big on that. Relish, what I noticed about Relish was they had to clearance out tons of them. If you ever thought about getting a Relish, especially those import ones made in Korea, they're probably made at World Manufacturing. Man, you can pick them up for a song now. Dirt cheap. I saw Sweetwater. I saw everybody. I was at going to guitar centers. This is months and months ago, and you'd walk into every guitar center. I walked in throughout the country. There was one Relish guitar sitting there for 30, 40, 50% off. So it looks like they were trying to move those. Modular guitars have a very specific need. As you guys know, I've used one for many years now, which is the Somnium one. And in my opinion, the Somnium one's the best one. A lot of people, I think, go for form over function, right? Look, no question. I think the Relish, in my opinion, is the best looking modular guitar out in the market. It looks cool. I love the way, obviously it looks. I like the concept, but to me, just like when I talk about, you know, other things that are function, in other words, I'm trying to make content, I'm trying to make videos, I'm trying to do things, Somnium guitar, it gets the job done, right? It's no fuss, no muss, and it's legit, and I can do everything with it, especially with the modifications I've done to it over the years that are particular to me, right? So in other words, help me get to the job. So so to me, that's still my favorite one, without a doubt. And I actually I prefer, I don't know if I prefer it, but I really like that it's just a Tele-shaped body guitar and stuff. But yeah, I haven't seen much more. Like I said, I keep seeing people. There was always, it seems like every NAMM show, even though it's been a while, there's always a new modular guitar. And like I said, the Somnium one just works the best. But they're expensive, like everything else. It's a very expensive guitar. You have to have a purpose for it or a want that rates that kind of money. So there you go. I don't know if that's an update, but that's what I've noticed. Brian says, hey, Phil, how hard is it to do a drop fill on the inside horn of a 2012 Angus Young signature guitar? So if you guys don't know what a drop fill is, it's real common in the guitar repair industry. A drop fill is like where you have a dent and you fill it with usually super glue, okay? It's real common to do that, right? You can fill it up with super glue. If you guys seen, I have a video where I show you how to steam dents out of necks if there's no finish on them. So if you have a dent in a unfinished neck, which by the way is why almost every travel guitar I like has an unfinished neck, because if I dent it, I can steam it and fix it. But if you have a finished neck and you dent it, how do you fix it? You can't steam it out. So they do what's called drop fill. Usually use super glue. You can, what was the question? Have I ever done it? Or was the question, how do you do it? Oh, how hard is it? It's not hard to do it. Basically, if you haven't seen anybody do it before, you take a very small drop of super glue and you drop it in there and you're kind of guesstimating, right? You're kind of like, okay, if you think three drops is what it's going to take to fill that area of glue, and you want to drop a couple drops like on a piece of paper or something, you get a feel for how much is coming out of the bottle. If you think three drops, which is a lot, by the way, if you think three drops are going to fill it, you definitely do one. If one drop, you got to be a little bit more caring and maybe use a toothpick or something, because you want to, like I said, you don't want to overfill it too much. Then what happens is you can let it harden, and then once it's hardened, you can sand it flush. And even with a painted finish, you can use you can sand it and you can steel wool it, and then you can buff it. The thing about the you said 2012 Angus Young, I'm assuming it's a Gibson. If it's an Epiphone drop filling polyurethane and urethane finishes, is super easy. And I remember, I'm not a finish person. I don't do finish work, but I mean, I've had to do, you know, some repairs like that throughout the years. You do everything at some point. And then kind of like anybody, like, I guess like a handyman, I think of sometimes repair techs more like handy people. Is handyman a thing you say anymore? Handy people. You become more of that, less than like a luthier. Like to me, like a luthier is someone who's like focused on doing, like building the guitars. Repair, to me, you specialize in it almost. Like a handy person would say, I do drywall work, I do plumbing, you know, I'll fix it, but I'm not going to touch your electrical, right? Same thing with me. Guitar repair work for me was always like electronics, absolutely. Setups, absolutely. Fret work, of course. Installing hardware and components, absolutely. But finish work, it's just not what I'm into. And to me, I don't enjoy it. And so I didn't enjoy it and I didn't do it. One thing you have to worry about always with, Nathan's saying Stumac has glue loopers for drop fills. Absolutely. I have those too, Nathan. They're awesome. And then Nathan's in the chat. So here's the thing I was going to ask. Well, I was going to tell you, but now if Nathan's there, maybe we can get him to answer while he's in the chat. With the nitro, I don't know about the super glue. I'm not super glue drop filled a whole lot of nitro guitars. So that's one thing you have to be aware of. But how hard is it? Man, I don't know. To me, a better question is, how good do you want it to look? So the better you want it to look, the much harder it gets. Function, like if you just don't want to fill a dent in your neck, you can absolutely do it and make it work. If you want it to look good or to the point where you don't see the damage, you definitely want to take it to somebody who does finish work, without a doubt. So, you know, that's one reason that happens to guys like me was I would do repair work. And then when I had finish work, I would send it off to a finish person. So I would take the jobs, but I would never do the finish work. I would just have them, you know, like, hey, I'm, you know, here it is. Just do the finish. So there you go. Just because, like I said, I don't, oh, no one asked this, but I'm just, I don't know, maybe somebody's curious. Do I regret not doing finish? Absolutely not regretting never doing finish work. So it drives me crazy. It's like I said, Nathan is amazing at it. And I watch now, if I need finish work, consult, I have Nathan do it and it works. And I've always had that in the past. If I need somebody to consult, for that, I always have a good finish person that I know. Okay. Alrighty. Okay. Next question is from John. John's a patron who sent me through the patron system saying, hey, will that we be having a StuMac club discount again? Yes. The goal is to launch it next Friday. It's not because the next Friday is Black Friday, but it's because we didn't get it done at any time. We were debating how to do it, what to do. Like I said, all these interactions or all these cooperative deals with companies is always negotiated to some degree, right? We're always after something. It's not financial. Like I said, the financial seems to be the easiest part. You know, it's like, hey, you know, this is what we want to do. So these kind of deals, what they are. So let me just give you a heads up next week. If you join me next Friday, and as you guys know, in the past, some Black Fridays I've done shows and some I haven't. I will be doing one this Friday coming up. And I'll be releasing two products during the show that are being released on Black Friday that are going to be fun, just for the fun of it, okay? And the other one is the StuMac deal. So we'll be offering a deal. The deal is you're going to get 10% off of whatever you buy from StuMac and 50% off the StuMac deal, which gives you the free freight for the year and all that stuff. The same deal we did last year. We did it around this time last year. Remember, I negotiated a deal with StuMac to do it. StuMac was willing to do it again this year. And as you guys know, this is what I'm waiting to hear from. And I'm going to give you a loose answer right now. It's not a hard yes. It's a soft yes. As you guys know, StuMac's been really dramatically dropping prices and putting on discounts across. And so the question is, if I tell you guys you get 10% off, are you going to get 10% off all the discounted prices too? The answer now is soft yes, but that's because they haven't said no yet. Right? So we'll find out if there's some kind of caveats. But yes, to answer your question, John, next Friday, I'll have a code for you guys and it'll be for a certain period of time here, a few weeks or whatever, and you guys can use it. And it's always a great deal for us too, because you'll get 10% off, you'll get half off the thing, and then whatever you buy, they kick us a percentage back. It's like 90%. We get like 90% of the money. Yeah, that's never gonna happen. Okay, so there you go. That's it. I'm excited for that. And by the way, that's because you guys constantly were asking and reminding me about that. So I appreciate that. And also, I'd like to point out Shauna has been handling all of that. So I haven't been doing none of it. I'm just waiting for the answers. So thank them for getting that done. Okay. The next one was Joe wants to know, what's my thoughts on the Solar S line? Solar's line. Solar S line. Okay, let's go to it. Can we find it? Yes, we can. Here we go. What are we talking about? Let's go to the web. Okay, so as you guys know, Solar Guitars, obviously is Ola England, is a owner of that company, and he has Solar Guitars. Solar S Guitars, or I thought they referred to as by Solar Guitars or something like that. Let's see, same detail, crafts work and design, the heart of Solar Guitars. Ola England changes the metal guitar game forever. No, it says with ultra affordable S by Solar. Oh, so it's S by Solar. That's right. I knew it was by Solar brand. Prices start from just $219. That's right. You can get a V guitar for like $300. So the question I think was, did I see it? I did see it. What do I think of it? I think it's amazing and perfectly timed. That's what I want to give them credit for more than anything else. You're like, it's an interesting thing happened simultaneously right now in the market. I don't know if I've ever, and I'm always, you know, I don't think of myself as the oldest person around, but I feel pretty old, been around a while. And so I'm a little shocked sometimes when I see something and I'm like, I never would have predicted that. Simultaneously, right now, if you were asking me a pulse on certain things, and this is what I'm going to talk about, and this is what matters for the Solar S guitars. In the market right now, I am seeing two things happen simultaneously that almost boggle my mind, okay? And what it is you see a mass, and I mean a mass or massive, depending on how you look at it, a mass amount of inexpensive gear being offloaded. In other words, apparently during COVID or just for the last few years, there are tons of people who have amassed insanely large, I don't want to say insanely because, you know, hey, who am I to judge, right? Very large collections of very inexpensive gear, okay? We're talking about guitars that are priced in the $100 range to $300 range, right, and under, okay? And lots of them, okay? So when you see this, you see like $10,000, $20,000 worth of guitars that are like $100, $150, and they're offloading them right now. And they're not moving. And that's what's gunking everything up. So, I, you know, as you guys know, one thing that's nice about my circumstances is that I'm friends with a lot of people in the industry. And of course, I spend a lot of time on the phone with them every week talking about all kinds of things that are important and, you know, to get things done business related wise. And this is just something that keeps coming up, right? And this one thing, which is everybody's gunking up on these tons of inexpensive guitars. Now, why I'm saying this is weird at the simultaneous thing, at the same exact time, inexpensive guitars, new guitars are just still flying. They're still moving like crazy. So it's like people are like, they bought a lot of cheap guitars, inexpensive guitars. Sorry, guys. I know you hate it when I say cheap, but inexpensive guitars. They're trying to get rid of them. And then there's other groups that want to buy them. You're thinking, okay, cool. These two people will come together and then everything will correct itself, right? It's the mother nature of gear, right? Like, I'm going to sell all my crap. And this guy's like, I'm going to buy all your crap. And then that works out. But instead, what I'm seeing is I'm going to sell all my stuff. And the other guy's like, I'll buy new stuff for $100, $200, but I won't buy your used stuff for that. So no one's buying up the bargain deals. And I don't know if that maybe the misalignment is the pricing. Maybe because the people trying to offload their inexpensive inventory are just not chopping the price low enough. So this is why I have to say it this way. I think Solar executed perfectly. This is perfect timing when you want to start putting out some price-friendly product. Okay? This is definitely when you want to come out and say, hey, are you guys a little... Ooh, you guys coming out of this mess for the last couple of years going, inflation kind of sucks and I'm sick of paying $3,000 and $1,000 for every single thing. Here you go. Here you can go through, you know, $200-$300 guitars. So I think it's a smart move. I think the timing of it is great. And what else? That's about it. Now, only time will tell, you know, why, how it goes. No one asked this part, but this is a very important part. If you're really paying attention, this is really what you have to pay attention to. You have to think about a company as a whole. If you want to think, like, if we're going to talk business stuff, Solar Guitars now in the last 12 months has executed a couple interesting things, okay? They've obviously come out with a pedal, which is a very, very smart move, right? Especially attached to Ola, the Chug pedal, which is a very high impulse byproduct. Gets people excited. You know, a lot of people will throw down for a pedal because there's always another pedal for fun, right? Something they can play with and enjoy and you know, enjoy in their collection and then maybe get rid of it when they're done. Pedals are not very financially harmful to most players buying and churning them, so to speak. They also came out with very high-end expensive guitars. So think about this. Simultaneously this year, Solar Guitars has now come up with a top-tier line and now a bottom-tier line. And that could be, and I don't know. I don't know the Solar guys that great. Ola's been always really kind and super nice when I've interact with him, but I couldn't say I know him much more than I don't know him at all. The guys at Solar, what's interesting is this now really cements the middle, I think, in a really interesting way, right? Because now you don't look at the Solar guitars as the most expensive guitars because they have a new expensive high tier. And you don't think of them as, you know, beginner student grade instruments because they now have a lower tier. So I think it could be more than just coming out with the right guitars at the right time. This could be just an overall strategy that is just, in my opinion, ingenious. To basically cement your guitars as good quality working grade, working musician type instruments that you know, have respect, right? And then bam. And then if you want something a little expensive, and it lets them try the line and work up to it. And then if you have someone who's like a diehard, like I love Solar, I just love the guitar, I love the company, now you have some premium for them to buy. I think it's a great idea all the way around. So it'll be interesting. But like I said, the timing of it, I think, is perfect, even though I had to throw in the caveat that simultaneously, if you hear me saying there is a gluttony of inexpensive guitars, I say that because every store I walk in now is just got rows and rows of $100 and $200 guitars, just rows of them. And so, you know, I shouldn't say rows, it's stacks of them. I've been in 6 music stores in the last few months where I saw what I thought was a lot, where customers could see it, but when you go in the back of the store, they were stacked to the ceilings with just inexpensive guitars, just stacking up. They can't move them. Used. They can just move new ones. So there you go. Let's see. Luis says people rather gamble on new. This could be true. You know, I've had so many bad experiences in the last, let's say, 3 years with Reverb used. And it's not Reverb the company, right? Reverb the company has actually been the holy crap. Without them, you'd be screwed. But I feel like, you know, every once in a while, I think it's the game you play. You know, if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to buy lots of guitars, you know, obviously you have some free capital and you're out there trying to enjoy yourself with your hard earned money. You know, there's some wins and some losses. You got to be normal about that, I think. And so I'm used to the idea, you know, you can buy a used guitar and you buy another used guitar and you buy another used guitar. And then every once in a while, the guitar is not as described or it's not what you hoped or, you know, no matter what your due diligence is, there's an issue. I find now that on Reverb, especially Reverb, it's like it's never enough. The pictures are never clear enough. The description is never good enough. I mean, what I mean by that is, like, even if I think it's a detailed description with detailed pictures, you get it, and there's still something wrong that they didn't disclose that somehow kind of widged by you, right? So there's always something going on. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's just people's ethics have been dropping over the last few years, or it's just a different kind of person has been drawn to the platform to sell. But overall, I feel like 70%, 7 out of 10 times buying used on Reverb, it doesn't net me a very positive result. I'm not really happy with the purchase. I'm just like, in fact, I'm getting to the point now where if I don't get screwed, I feel pretty good on Reverb. I'm like, oh yeah, that's just pretty much what he said it was and nothing more, nothing better. but at least it was close to what he said. So there you go, you know, so that you could be right, Luis. That's a great observation. Maybe that's what it is too. Or maybe it's just, you know, new product is always new, exciting and new, you know, so if, when you see a used Harley Benton or a used Squire or a used something sitting somewhere at a price, you're like, I've seen that before, but this new Solar is different. There wasn't that before. There wasn't a $300 Solar V that you could buy before, but now there is. And maybe that pulls you in. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. There you go. And then, on the used market too, obviously the high end guitars now are starting to feel the same pressure as the lower price guitars where they're sticking. It's a term, I don't know if it's a retail term. I'm not really a retail person. I had a store for 13 years, but that's because I'm a guitar fanatic that had a store. So, business wise, I have that acumen, but as like a retail, I never worked a retail job before or after since my store ever. I don't know if I ever told that to anybody, but I've never even had one for a minute. So I'm not really familiar with a lot of retail terms, but I used to call it sticky because it's sticking on the wall. And they go, that guitar's still here? Yeah, it's sticky. It just doesn't want to peel off the wall. It's stuck. So I feel like there's more sticky guitars now. So I just want you to know, reference what I'm saying. Somebody's probably going to go, I worked retail for 35 years and the term is this. Whatever that term is, that's fine. But so there you go. You know what? For fun, I've never probably told this story and I'll tell it because, like I said, I don't have a problem embarrassing myself. When I opened my store, just to give you an idea, like I said, I'm into guitars. I fix guitars. I was building basses at the time. I was like, I'm going to do this, right? So when it came to the business side of the store, of how to set up the business, that, and I asked my, you know, wife Shauna to help me. I knew how to do that. I knew how to do a lot of stuff. I actually set up the POS system, right? Do all this stuff. The first day I did all the sweat equity. I say I, but it was us. But you understand, like, these are things I knew to do. Okay. And so the, I don't know if it was the day the store was supposed to open or the day before. I feel like it was like the day before, a couple of days before the store was supposed to open. I was at the counter and, you know, we're still putting inventory on the walls and I'm getting ready to open the store. I'm very excited. And my wife, Shauna, walks up and goes, where's the cash register? And I go, I don't need a cash register. I have a POS system. When you buy something, I have an invoice and it prints out and I hand you your invoice. She goes, where do you put the cash? And the counter, which I you know, we built, it was black and had shelves. And I go, well, if they give me cash, I showed her on the shelf, I had some cash and some change, like stacks of change. Like, this is where the cash goes. Okay. So I go, I just use that. She goes, you have to have a register. I'm like, yeah, no, you don't. You have this is what the invoice system's for. So she goes, where's your open close sign? I go, well, I'll just unlock the door and turn on the lights. So she gets me to go in the car and she drives me to a Costco in Phoenix, Arizona. I guess there's one Costco in Phoenix area and that Costco is specifically for businesses. So you go there. It was a much different Costco than I've ever been to before. You walk in and I think to get in there, you have to have a business or something. You have to show you have the business or whatever. Anyways, you go in there and it's all the stuff you see in businesses, including open signs, which we bought, and cash registers, which we bought. And then, of course, the tons and tons of rolls of paper. So the day we opened, we had a cash register, but you understand, like, my... If you had any questions about any product in that store, I could probably not only tell you in every detail, I could tell you everything you need to know. And it would definitely be helpful in every way. But like I said, that I had never worked retail before at all. I just not a, you know, when I was younger, only cool kids got retail jobs. I got like fry cook, you know, you know, I got grunty jobs because that's what dudes got, you know, like me that were, you know, cool. You had to be like, you know, to get in the mall, a job at the mall, stuff like whatever retail. Like I never did that stuff. And then I joined the Army. And then after the Army, after school and stuff, I got a job in like corporate America. So there's my excuse. So that is almost like a stupid way to tell you, like, the fact that the store was successful for 13 years is beyond insanity when you think about all of those things. And I could probably tell you a 10 more stories like that where I did something and thank God through Ralph or Shauna or somebody, they were there to go, yeah, no, that's not how it goes. I'm like, all right, I'll just stand here and if anyone has a question about guitars, I'll take care of that. Okay, I'm sorry I went on a tangent. I apologize. Let's go back to some guitar stuff. Okay, there is another question right here. Why am I missing it? Why is it? Okay. This one came from a moderator, Unfreaking Believable. I'm like the only YouTube channel that won't say the bad word for him. The other channels say it. I don't know why I don't say it. I don't have a problem with cursing. I just don't do it on the show when I can help it. So what does he ask? He's asking, did I see the deal with Dean? So if you haven't seen Dean, let me show you here. Dean Guitars is back with a vengeance. I don't know why, but I really like that. I'm such a dad joke humor person that the idea that the guitar is called Vengeance and it's back with a vengeance. And, you know, here I am, like a lot of channels like me, we're out there going, Dean's over. Well, we're not saying they're over, but they're dealing with problems, which is they still are. Let's go back to the guitar. So back with a vengeance and zero apologies. Oh, I got to love the article for that. Following Gibson's lawsuit, Dean is selling V-shaped guitars again under a new name. I don't know why I'm reading it like this. I hope you guys enjoy it. And like the design, it's rather pointed. Mwahaha. This article, give props to the person who wrote this. I love this kind of stuff, so you guys know. Some people, you know, I love it. Lay into that. That was cheesy and awesome, and I loved it. Okay, so what's going on? So Dean Guitars is back with a guitar, a vengeance, with a vengeance guitar that is a V guitar after being sued and essentially losing to Gibson Guitars for basically not being able to make certain guitars. And I think V obviously was one of them. So, but it was also the naming thing. Again, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to go down the attorney side, but I'm going to give you some insight that might help you what's going on here. So sure. Now, like everything on this show, This is not a formal video. This is just a conversation of a community. You guys are here hanging out with me and we're talking about this. It's a water cooler talk channel. It just happens to be public. So I need you to understand that I'm not doing 10 hours of research to find out what's going on. We're just talking about it. The only thing is maybe I can have some insight because obviously I've been around this industry for a while. So I might have something to add that might be useful, or it might be just the dumbest thing you ever heard. You understand it could go either way. In this particular case, I don't really believe that nothing in my body screams that Dean is just going, we lost to Gibson, so it's, and we're making V's. I don't think that's probably happening, okay? So you know. So what I think's probably happening is they might have, you know, obviously them and Gibson had their legal battle. I'll say battle for the lack of a better term. And obviously Gibson basically became victorious in that legal battle. That is my understanding it as a layman, not an attorney. And so now they're making a V, which is kind of probably weird to a lot of you who are like, wait a minute, they just got sued for making certain things and using certain names, because that was actually more important, the trademarking names. And now they're doing a V, and of course it's like kind of like this article is like kind of laying in on the whole screw you Gibson, we're coming back and doing what we want. But what you don't understand is that the way that these companies think, and I mean all of them, all the guitar companies and the pedal companies, they all kind of follow the same thing. See, the big players like Gibson get all the drama. In other words, they're always constantly suing people and you're like, oh, they're evil. But the reality is that the small guys are just constantly suing each other all the time. I have done now probably 100, 200 interviews of people in this industry, either off the record, on the record interviews, all kinds. And there's not a single one that I can think of but there's probably one or two where there's not a story about somebody being sued or them suing somebody. It seems to be a really common practice in this industry, and I'm sure it's common practice everywhere. So here's what's interesting. This is what I can tell you because I'm kind of restricted on a piece of information. I can't tell you the full part of it, but the part I'll tell you now is going to help you with this understanding. I'm involved, in other words, I'm involved in this, so that's how I know this is accurate information I'm going to give you. I'm involved with a company who has secured the rights to make a V guitar from Gibson. In other words, they have gotten permission to make a V guitar from Gibson Guitars. So in that scenario, a company reached out to Gibson, asked for permission to make the V guitar, submitted information to Gibson's legal team, and through a conversation back and forth, Gibson has agreed to say, let them make a V guitar. This is not Dean, of course, because I don't know the Dean people. The reason I'm telling you that is because I want you to understand that the same thing could have happened with Dean. Dean could, even though they lost a lawsuit to Gibson and you think there's probably a fight to the death happening here, it's possible, but I'm giving you insight that Dean could have either A, found a loophole to what Gibson won't have an issue with, okay? Because not everything Gibson owns is an issue so far. As I pointed out many episodes ago when I talked about, when I pulled up, if you guys remember, you have to go back to that episode where I pulled up all of the trademark names that Gibson owns that are trademarked. One of them is Humbucker. They own the name Humbucker, right? But they're not shutting down everybody who's saying Humbucker either because they're not vigorously fighting that trademark. So in some cases, Gibson's going to fight a trademark or copyright stronger than another. We know that layman's legal. We know that if you don't vigorously fight them all, you lose them. But again, everybody's going to kind of pick their battles, right? They're going to figure out what they're focused on. So it could be as simple as Dean either found the loophole, what Gibson doesn't have a problem with, or like another company submitted a, hey, we're doing this. Do you see a problem? And I should actually be clear because I'm not an attorney, but an attorney, I can hear like kind of my attorney friends telling me to make sure I correct this language. In the scenario I'm talking about with the V guitar with Gibson, and permission, Gibson did not give permission. Gibson just said they don't have a problem with it. That's a much different thing, right? I'm sure an attorney can argue both things, that they're both things, but I'm not saying Gibson's like, yeah, please make V's. I'm saying that Gibson went, okay, we looked at what you have prospectively and we don't have a problem with that, you know, or we wouldn't see a problem with, you know, having to take action. So it's as possible that Dean's just navigating that too as well. Or like I said, or they could be giving the thumb up to Gibson, but I can't imagine because that they would want to, I mean, you know, we've talked about Armadillo, who is the company who owns Dean, the brand Dean. They've had a lot of problems and I feel bad because a lot of those problems are not problems. You know, it's not the company, it's people in the company. Things have happened. But it's not like consumer problems. Like they're not, you know, it's not like they screwed consumers and now they're paying the price. There's things where they got screwed by people. But so I, of course, like I've said before, I like to see Dean succeed. I'd like to see Dean make more products and stuff. I mean, I'm a guitar fanatic, right? You know, so I want to see it all, right? I want to see all the guitar companies do well. But I would imagine in Dean's current circumstances with all of the issues going on, I can't imagine Dean's going to go out looking for a fight and swinging like that. It just doesn't make sense to me. So it's one of those things I'm going to err. It's kind of like last week when, you know, we were talking about the slashes now with Magnatone. And I said, I'm so glad I said it too. I said, yeah, but nowhere did I read he left Marshall. And then he put out a statement after the live show saying, oh, I'm not leaving Marshall. And then I got a couple of people like, you need to correct this. And I'm like, what do you mean correct it? I already said it. I said it in the show. I said exactly that. He's with Magnatone, but he didn't say he was leaving Marshall. Did anyone hear anything? And we had that discussion, and the discussion I think still holds true, just like this discussion holds true, which is, you know, Dean could be thumbing their their vengeance at Gibson, or it could be, like I said, they are skirting around. PRS did the same thing. Think about this. Now, not, I don't mean asking permission. Paul Reed Smith Guitars, after winning the lawsuit or the argument with Gibson about the single cut guitar, not only did PRS didn't make it, they, like I said, they made it more like a Gibson. The single cut PRSs pre the Gibson lawsuit looked less like Gibsons than they do now. They were usually one piece wraparound bridges with the switch, I think, down below. And then after the lawsuit, after basically Gibson couldn't stop them from making the single cut, they went to two-piece bridges, and then they put it through. It's kind of like, well, you can't do anything to us, so we're going to do worse. Maybe Dean's doing that too. Like, hey, you can do this, but you can't come after us for this. In my experience dealing with companies, they really are more, they're really aggressive with trademarks more than copyrights, although they do both, but, and they're more aggressive with names than they are of anything else. And that's just my experience with this. When, like I said, when you do these interviews of all these guitar amp builders, pedal builders, they'll tell you all the cease and desist they get. And so, you know, this is another credit to the industry that you have to be aware of. That's really nice to know. The majority of stories I've ever heard, whether they're my friends in the industry or just like I said, I had the privilege of interviewing them, they always will tell me, like, I was called by the owner of this company, and this always with, I don't want to send you paperwork, legal paperwork, but I want you to stop doing this before I do. So there is a lot of that in this industry. It's more so than you think. So really interesting. Really interesting. But yeah, I saw it. It's cool. It's a good looking V too. I liked it. So hold on, let me go back. Yeah, I like it. I like that it's got the Evertune in it. So really, really cool. That Fishman Fluence in there. Like a King V. What I would call that. It's a King V. So I don't know. Like I said, it's an interesting thing, but thank you for bringing it up. I like stuff like this. Cause like I said, I'm always like, it's like really cool. All right. Any comments on that? Okay. Super Lead 100 said Magnatone is Slash's side chick. Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny about the Slash thing is that it's becoming super common. And I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. But I have a theory. I want to give you a theory. And I really would love to have you guys hear this theory. And then maybe, you know, you guys can mull it over and put in comments what you think of it. You know, more so than ever before now, you have so many artists with multiple endorsements. And not just multiple, like, you know, a pickup endorsement and then a guitar endorsement and then an amp endorsement. But like, you know, like Slash, he's with Marshall, he's with Magnatone. You have Kirk Hammett, he's with Gibson, and he's with ESP, right? You have, you have Tosin Abasi, he's got his own brand of guitars, and he's with Music Man for guitars, right? So you're seeing this a lot, okay? That they have these multiple like products, almost competing products, and they're layering up like that. And, one, I think it's amazing, by the way. I think it's great because I've never believed, and like a lot of people, I've become butthurt, many times, especially when I was younger, about like when musicians didn't use the gear that their name was on. It was almost like I took it personal because I bought it. And I was like, oh, I bought this guitar and then, like, you know, I bought a John Mayer Strat with a stripe and I go to a concert and he doesn't even play that one. You're like, he's playing all these other ones. You're like, what's going on here, man? You know, I bought this because of you and now you're not using it and it makes me feel bad. And you get upset, right? And the reality is that, you know, they probably don't want to play the same thing all the time, you know, even if it is the perfect guitar, or the perfect amp. So I love that they're doing multiple products. I think it's actually really smart, right? I think it's really cool. But I didn't tell you the theory. My theory is that the YouTubers and the influencer area started this. And so, you know, I everybody's going to have different perception, but I think of influencers as more social media types and YouTubers are more of like content creation, like they make videos. I don't know why I think that. I just do. I think it's because when I think of influencers, I think of somebody like, you know, putting on, doing a makeup tutorial and telling you to buy this makeup, not so much, you know, making content on a video, but who knows? I don't know. But this is the theory. The theory is that I had this interesting conversation once with a professional guitar player that obviously I'm not going to name because it's not important to the story, but, and I never got permission for him to tell you this story. A company was trying to get a hold of me, okay? And as you guys know, it can get really difficult sometimes. You know, I have a lot of stuff to do. I'm really like, you know, I don't have, you know, an assistant and all that stuff, right? I'm just a dude on YouTube in my bedroom, right? When you think of small business, this is as small as it gets, right? Anyways, company's trying to get a hold of me, not having any luck. And then ironically, in the weirdest way, happened to know that I knew this musician and they asked him for a favor. He happened to mention, I guess, apparently that he was going to meet up with me at an event. Everybody's like, Felix, it's not any guitar player you know. Okay. So there you go. When I say famous, I shouldn't say famous. Just say to me, he's an amazing musician. But here's the important part of the story. They asked him for the favor, which the favor was, they give him a piece of gear, okay? And they say, will you bring this to Phil when you see him next week? Because I'm at an event, and he's going to be at this event with a bunch of artists and a bunch of YouTubers. And he's like, I don't know. You know, he's like, I don't know how Phil would feel about that. And they're like, well, if you could, you know, if you could do that for us, it'd be great. Because they're just trying to get this piece of gear in my hands. Okay. So I meet up with him, you know, at the event. And he goes, hey, I have something for you in my car. We go to his car, and he hands me the piece of gear. And he's like, they just want me to hand to you. He goes, I don't know what's going on. I don't know anything about it. They just asked me to do this for you. And I said, oh man, thanks. This is really great. He goes, yeah, I was talking to him like a year ago and I guess it dropped off and, you know, the conversation dropped off. And I go, this is great. And I go, yeah, I'll email when I get back. And then because we're friends, he asked me an interesting question. And this was the interesting question. He says, can I ask you, what do you have to do because they gave this to you? And I said, well, obviously they don't give it to you. We trade, right? Like I hate the term free gear. Like they give you a guitar for free. No, you trade for it, right? You trade your time. You trade your videos. You trade whatever you're trading, right? It's a trade. It's a trade of some sort. Trades of goods or services, which is why you need to put, you know, the product was provided to you because you need to let people know that, hey, they're giving me this. Not because they think it's not my rich uncle just giving me a present. It's in exchange for something and obviously content or something to put in front of you guys. And I said, oh, I have to make a video. And he goes, and then what? And I go, well, then I'm done with it. And he goes, what do you do with it? I go, well, sometimes I keep it and sometimes you sell it off if it's sitting around. Sometimes it sits in a closet. I don't know. I go, it depends on the deal. I go, in this particular case, they're obviously not asking for it back. And he says, well, when a company gives me a piece of gear, I can only use that piece of gear and no other piece of gear. And I go, uh-huh. And he goes, so next week, you're going to use a different piece of gear? And I'm like, yeah, because I got to make a different video. And he's like, so they're going to give you this thing for one time? Like me, I'm on stage like, you know, 300 times a year. And I have to have this thing with me every time. But you only have to do it one time? You know, it means you, meaning YouTube channels. And I said, and so you understand the reason I'm telling the story is one, because I think that's the importance of this podcast is insight into the world of whatever I'm doing or this world of gear and music and YouTubers maybe sometimes and musicians. But the important part of the story was he's not confused about me. I'm just as confused about him. I'm like, I don't know. You mean you have to play this thing all the time? What happens if you want to play something else? And he goes, you can't. I go, what do you mean you can't? He goes, I can't. I got to play this or else. He goes, if I play somebody else's thing, they'll call me up. It won't be pretty. And I'm like, so I wonder now sometimes if the musician side has now experienced that apparently maybe the social media side doesn't work the same. I don't know. And that's why I said, it's a theory. I have nothing, but I thought I'd present it to you guys because it's funny to me that these kind of deals, although did happen before social media, seem to be more prevalent now. And I think it's because I would imagine if I was a musician, especially like Slash, I was playing an amp line and, you know, you're like, why am I locked to one thing? Why can't I have different things, right? You know, this guy, this, you know, not me, but some famous person on YouTube, they're doing 10 different things. So why can't I do 10 different things? So it might be a thing now. We might see more of it is basically what I'm saying. So, and I think it's for the good part because I think it was always dishonest when they always said they always one thing because we saw they didn't. We always knew that. All of us knew that. So, you know, so it's, I don't know. Like I said, I'd rather see them be more open and honest and not worry about, because that musician is not the only musician to tell me that essentially there's a punishment if they don't use the product in the face of the audience all the time. And to me, I'm like, you know, I don't care about that. You know, I don't care if they use 10 different things. So I don't know. Let's see. My knees hurt says, if you work for Pepsi, you cannot drink Coke, especially if you're driving that truck, right? Wasn't that a commercial? That is not uncommon. Yeah, like I said, I told you guys, you know, if you find the episode, you'll know what brand. I don't want to do it now because, again, sometimes when I tell you guys stories from a couple years ago, the brand, which I always say is the people at the brand, have changed. So I don't want to bring up a story that's probably not relevant now. But I had a brand once contact me. And it was really tough for me because they reached out to me, and some of you guys will remember the story, or you can go back and look at my timestamp videos from like 3-4 years ago, probably 4 years ago, and find it. They sent me a musician's contract, and in the contract, it was a complete violation of the rules I have to follow on social media platforms, which was they said that I couldn't disclose that they gave me the product. And I had to make sure that the product was front-facing on the stage at all times, which I was like, I don't have a stage, but I understand front-facing, right? But I told them, I said, my biggest problem is the first thing in this contract I have to do, which is disclose that you guys gave it to me, right? So the whole, I can't disclose it. And it wasn't like they were trying to be shady or commit a crime. They were using a contract that doesn't apply to my platform from another platform. So like I said, that's why I have this theory. Things like that have happened. And I've also had, I'll just tell you, cause it was funny. It was Gibson Guitars. Gibson Guitars once told me at an event, somebody, a representative of Gibson Guitars, they said, oh, hey, I saw your, hey Phil, I know your channel. I said, cool. This is years and years ago, obviously, cause I was at a NAMM show. And they said, hey, I'd like to work with you, but I know you're working with PRS. And I go, I'm not working with PRS. Like, I don't work with anybody, right? I didn't even know what they were talking about. I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. And they're like, well, I saw you did a video last like PRS. I'm like, let's say shipped out a guitar. You ship out a guitar, I'll do a video for you. Like, I go, we're a guitar player. It's a guitar-centric channel gear. We just want to put product in front of people and talk about it. And I was confused. And I think they were confused too, because like they were looking at it like, well, you must have some kind of contract with them. And I'm like, no, they've never paid me to this day, never paid me a single dollar. And sometimes they let the gear stay and sometimes the gear goes back. It depends on what they want and, you know, willing to do. And I said, no. So yeah, I know that side of the industry, the endorsement side can be a little different. So I'm curious to see if it's going to change as we go in the next few years. It'd be interesting. Love to hear your thoughts too about all this stuff. Okay, so we need to what? We need to go to another subject or topic. What do we have? We have a bunch right here. And I always love it when I'm looking for a screen because I get to drink some water. Okay, so the first thing I want to handle is the super chat I missed last week. Which was Peter. Peter says, Phil, do you consider an amp to be a tube amp if it only has preamp valves? Well, yes. I mean, if you're talking about like a solid state amp or maybe a Class D power amp section and it has preamp tubes in it, would I call that a tube amp? I would call it a tube amp with a caveat, right? Is that like a hyphen, right? I would call it a tube amp with a hyphen. It would be a tube amp with preamp tubes. You know what I mean? Just like there are the opposite of that. So, you know, Peter, there are amps that are solid state design technology for the preamp, but the power section is tubes. And I would also call that a tube amp, but I would also call it a hyphenated tube amp. Why I would say it's a tube amp with a power section. So I would consider them the same, but I would feel, and I'm gonna put this two different ways for you. I would feel like, yes, I personally would consider that a tube amp, but I would also feel like if you don't disclose, somebody says hybrid, thank you, Dirt Racer X. Hybrid is also a great way to put that, like a hybrid amp. But that again would follow under what I'm saying, some kind of disclosure. Like I would be really upset if somebody sold me an amp and said it was a all tube amp, and then I got it and it was not all, I mean, it has all the tubes. Are in there, right? To me, that deserves some kind of disclosure. Like it's a, you know, preamp, two preamp, two power amp section, or two powers, you know, you get the idea. There should you see some kind of disclosure there. But I still consider it a tube amp of sorts because it has tubes in it. Just like if somebody said it's a tube driven pedal, right? I would consider, you know, a pedal that has a tube in it to be a tube pedal. But this is where the disclosure would come in. Some actually use the right correct power voltage. I don't know why I'm saying power voltage. Correct voltage. So a tube needs to get a certain amount of voltage to it to actually do what it's supposed to do. So like I've seen preamp tube pedals where the preamp tube is not really getting the correct voltage. And I've had it explained to me by the designers and stuff of why it's still okay and stuff. And I'm not here to argue that. I'm not smart enough to know that stuff or care. But I am smart enough to know that you would want to disclose that, right? Like it's a tube, it's a pedal with a tube in it, but it's only running 9 volts. So therefore, you know, and then explain, right? So same with tube amps. Yes. Any amp with a tube in it is a tube amp, but it's a hyphenated tube amp to say tube amp with or disclose. That's my thoughts. Antique Rocker, thank you, says, great video on Strandberg with the True Temperament frets. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I didn't know when I made that video how I felt about it because it was less techie and more emotional discussion, and that's such a techie product that I was like, I don't know if people are going to appreciate it if I go how I feel about it. But I felt like, and I told Strandberg this too, I had trouble with it month after month, because trust me, I had it for months and months. I said a half a year, it's probably 8 months, it was a long time. And they were very patient, but trust me, every few months I got the how you doing. So I was like, I know I'm still working. And I told them what I'm basically going to tell you right now, which is you know, I just don't know how I feel about it yet. And I really don't want to make this video until I know, you know, and I just want to be, you know, accurate in my thought process. I don't want to have to recant in a year like, oh, now I don't like it or now I do like it. So your question was, how do you think they would sound if they were on acoustic guitar or hollow body electric? I think much better. So, you know, I really appreciate the Strandberg guitar and the True Temperament frets. But to me, the True Temperament frets are so interesting to me. I would absolutely love them. One of my favorite things, which I should have said, see, this is the things that happen sometimes when you go, oh man, is that Strandberg guitar is weight relieved. It's chambered. So I love it acoustically. I sit there and play that guitar with no amp plugged in. And that's what I love about it. Just strumming a chord, the body resonates because it's hollow for the most part because it's all chambered. And those True Temperaments are great. I think it would be even better on acoustic or a hollow body guitar. I think they would be fantastic. I would love this. I'd love to see that. I think more guitar companies have to embrace this. This is an expensive endeavor. And, you know, everybody's going to have everybody's going to have an opinion and harsh ones. In that video, there were some very positive comments that I really enjoyed. Thank you. And there were some really critiquing questions or comments that I enjoyed as well, by the way. And then there were some, you know, kind of harsh comments. But what's interesting is that maybe I didn't communicate correctly sometimes in the video. You know, you can't, you know, I'm not Martin Scorsese, okay? I'm just making a video in front of a camera and giving you thoughts. What I was just trying to communicate to you was I felt like I was the last person, musician, to want that system or enjoy it. You know, as making a video, I can make a video about it. But to tell you that it was something that I would see myself using, I just didn't think I was going to do it. So that was the big takeaway, is the fact that at the end of this, I was like, that guitar was nuts expensive, or it is nuts expensive. So let me tell you, I did not want to like that guitar because I did not set up a deal to keep that guitar. I would have worked harder if I known, you know, that's how it works sometimes when you get a guitar sent to you and you're going to make content. Look, if you know you're going to like the guitar, you start working in that into the arrangement. Like, hey, if I like this guitar, is there any way I could keep it? That'd be really nice. You know, and we could work out something. Or I could get special pricing or combination pricing, something, right? But a lot of times a guitar like that, I was just going for the views. I was like, oh yeah, you will like it because it's squiggly frets and it'll be a discussion and that video will be interesting just in that topic. And so I just need to borrow it. That's it. And because nowhere in my brain did I think I would ever like those frets. Not that I thought they were bad. I never thought it would apply to me. And that's what it is. I'm shocked and I really enjoy it. And all the negatives I said about it are still accurate and all the positives are still accurate and I still love it. So there you go. And I'll probably end up doing another video about it, believe it or not, because I think even if no one watches that video, I feel like there's more to discuss on that topic. Because it was a fun, now it was, but certain, it was probably one of my highest stress reviews. I think the two highest stress reviews I've ever done is that one and one that's coming in about a week. there you go. Maury's Music says, hey Phil, we're selling our business. Do you have any advice on selling an online guitar store? Sure, well, this is the platform to mention yours for sale, finding the right buyer. So, you know, I will, this is a great question. It's a different question, not because it's unique to you. Not a lot of people watching the video are going to be like, I'm selling a music store too. So it's not a big question, but let's just go over a couple of things that might help you and be interesting to others. First of all, when I closed my store, we did put it for sale. I had four offers, I think. I know for a fact three. I'm trying to think there was one other, maybe we didn't, but we had three offers to buy our business. And those three offers were totally different offers as what you will experience is when you sell a business, especially in this industry. And I really want to focus on business selling in this industry because somebody's like, I sold my Subway franchise and let me tell you when. I'm like, dude, if you don't know the guitar industry, this is the weirdest industry. this is so wacky. So a couple things that you need to know. Let me just tell you first why I didn't sell my business, okay? Because we were going to sell the store. And especially the Lesson Academy, because obviously it was a huge monthly residual. Okay, so you know you had a high rent. I was in a high rent area. Like I said, about $7,000 a month in rent at the time. I don't know what it'd be now. It'd be crazier now, but back then it was crazy. But you had this Lesson Academy that was built in cash every month from all these students coming because we got a piece of every lesson, and that paid the rent and then some. So we were net positive, like on the first of the month. So before anybody thinks about anything else, I just want you to understand that you can sell a business that immediately is like it's paying for itself, and then now you just worry about how to make, you know, your end of the money, of course, and pay your employees and stuff like that. And one of the problems I had, okay, so I had a unique problem, and this is why I'm telling you this because maybe it'll pertain to you. But more importantly, I want to tell it because I think it might be interesting to people. I didn't want to sell my name. The name of the store is McKnight Guitar Company. I put my name in it because I didn't want to be sued. See, when I started my store, I was going to call it the Guitar Company. I had this stupid idea. I told you I was not a retail person. My wife, for an anniversary, I bought her a Tiffany's necklace. It was like a sterling necklace. Remember when those were like the thing? Like all the women had this sterling Tiffany's necklace. I bought her a Tiffany's necklace. And when I bought it, you know, being a poor person going in that store was very awkward for me, even if when I had a corporate job and I could, you know, but I went in that store and I bought this thing. And I just remember like the way women reacted to this turquoise box. It was like this amazing thing that I never really comprehended at any level. And so I bought her this necklace and I when I was thinking of what to name the guitar store, I go the Guitar Company. Cause I'm like, oh, like, you know, Tiffany's and Company, right? I go with the Guitar Company, you know, right? So I go, that's going to be the best name ever. So what happened was, through a very long story that I'm not going to tell today, it hit me right before we opened the store, right being a month or so, that the Guitar Center might have a problem with me calling my store the Guitar Company. Like, I don't know, right? And what if they sue me? Right? I'm like, remember, I don't know anything. I'm not an attorney. So I'm like, I don't know. I just don't want trouble. And the bigger problem is before you guys think anything, before anyone says anything in the comments, that's going to probably be dumb to say, just let me warn you. A sign back then was like $4,000 to $8,000 on your building and had to be approved by the city, and then you pay taxes on it every month, and you have to get it approved by the landlord of the building. And so you got to understand, like, just the idea that I might have to, I'm paying for this sign, and if we have to change it, we're screwed, is a big deal, okay? Regardless of anything, even if it was just a cease and desist, just the changing of the sign could be, you know, $6,000 to $7,000, you know, to take it off and put a new one on. So what happened was I changed it to McKnight Guitar Company. The problem with my, when I decided to not have the store anymore, right, when I decided I'm not going to work in the store anymore, and then Sean and Ralph were like, well, if you're not coming in anymore because you're doing content and all your other stuff, we're just going to call it an end. And there's a ton of reason for that. Again, that could be a story for another day, because it was really interesting at the time. But here's the important part. To buy the store, I couldn't give them the name because I was afraid that it would be confusion that I would have this YouTube channel that was growing, and then people would go to the old store that I'm not associated with anymore, and they would think that I'm associated with it, and then next thing I know, I'm on a live podcast and somebody's like, I bought a tuner from you yesterday and it doesn't work, and I'd be like, I don't sell tuners. Right? So that's why I had to do that. And we ended up not selling the store because the guy who had the best deal, the guy that offers the best money deal, he said something that freaked me out, and I don't know if he meant it, but when we were talking, I told him, I said, I can't give you the name of the store, but keep in mind, all the students are coming every week. The residuals are coming every week. You know, the lease will help you negotiate because you got to negotiate the lease in their name and all that stuff. And he's like, no problem. He goes, of course. He goes, we're going to change the name of the store. And I go, cool. And he goes, and if anyone mentions, you know, like, oh, is this used to be McKnight's? He goes, yeah, of course. I'll tell him it was McKnight's. And I'm like, and the way he said it, it's like, that's exactly what I'm trying not to have. I don't want to be connected to it. Otherwise, I could just leave it open because it will do well off my YouTube channel too. But that's not what I was after. So in your case, Murray's Music, he said, wait, hold on. He goes, I'm not adverse to staying connected to Murray's Music. Well, here's what's interesting. This is the other thing you have to be aware of. Selling a business is very tricky, especially when it's not a large business. And so there's a ton of things you have to do. First of all, you want to get your accountants involved. You're going to need an attorney, but more importantly, the financing and the way that's going to happen is pretty tough. This industry is not full of people who are high dollar rollers coming in. They're not going to come in. A lot of them are going to want cash carry. In other words, they're going to want to give you a certain amount of money. Okay. And they're going to want you to carry the rest of the debt, and they pay you. And this is where I've told you, I've interviewed tons of people. When I say people, I don't mean just guitar builders. I mean people who own small music stores, people who own big music stores, and people who own chain music stores. And they all have a consistent story, which is it's a very horrible process. So I'm not trying to say anything other than you have it's a tough road, and it's not going to be easy, especially with an online entity versus a physical store. One is not easier than the other, but the internet one is a little harder for you to convince, like, some people that it's a real business. I mean, it's hard to explain internet to a lot of people still. But what I would first do is let people know that you're interested in selling your business. I would put it out there. I wouldn't put it on Craigslist, although you can. What I would do is reach out through forums and stuff and see, like, right now we're talking about it. You know, you never know. Somebody might contact you on Monday and go, you know, it's been my life dream to own a business. Let me learn more about your business. Like I said, it's a tough thing. Like I said, in my case, it worked out to where I'm like, you know what? It just doesn't make sense to sell it off. Let's just go ahead and shut it down. And then we physically sell off the assets later, right? We just did that way. So I don't know if that was helpful, but I figure, you know, at least I can give you those insights. And then same thing with your name. If your name is, you know, it's tough, right? You guys are cracking me up. All right, let's go to the next question. You can also send me an email. I'm about stuff like that. You know, I don't know what help I could be, but certain things, I have helped a couple people sell their stores, and I've helped a couple people buy a store. And when I say helped, I'm not going to do it for you. And I can't, you know, I just don't have those kind of the bandwidth of time to do that. But certain questions, if there's something I can add to help, I'll do it. And if I don't know, it's kind of like a lot of stuff, I'll just go, I don't know, man, I'm sorry. But sometimes you might get lucky and I'll go, but I don't know the answer, but this is the guy who does. And I'll send you that way. Father Ratner says, did you see Fender is adding over 100 jobs in Arizona? Yeah, something about the west side or something, right? They're on the other side of town too, right? They're adding a lot of jobs. Let me see if I can get an exact, because this is important that people understand. I'm in Arizona, not California, and Fender is both in California and Arizona. So what is in Arizona is essentially the call center. So if you call customer service for Fender, you're going to get people in Arizona, not in California. Some of the marketing team is in California. Some of the R&D is here in Arizona. The factory, of course, is in California. The accounting, I think, is also in Arizona. Like I said, a lot of the support, so think of it like support, right? The support system for the company is in Arizona. And I'm trying to find an article because obviously if there's a local one, because, yep, it's going to add 100 jobs. I don't want to confuse you guys. If they're adding 100 jobs in Arizona, they're most likely, in fact, very likely, 100% likely not to be actually manufacturing type jobs. They don't manufacture here. So my guess is exactly that. They could be adding more accounting, more collections. They probably do their own internal collections there. They probably have call service there, IT. Hold on. The employees, well, I don't know. So it's not really saying exactly. I'm not saying exactly, but everyone knows. Yes, I saw briefly that Fender was adding like 100 jobs, and I thought somebody mentioned that it was on the other side of town where their current facility is. That's a discussion for another day too. Their current facility is funny to me, but I don't want you to understand that. I want you to understand that if they're adding 100 jobs in Arizona, they're not adding 100 factory jobs. That's the only thing perfect. Let's see. All right. Yeah, Chris says, yep, it may be there are a lot of call centers in Arizona. Arizona has probably more call centers than probably most states just because of the way we have a perfect storm of two things in Arizona. Three things, actually. We have a great time zone, so we can work the East Coast and then the West Coast, which is great. So if you want to set up a call center, the East Coast can call in, and then when they shut off, you have the West Coast, so you're set up perfectly. You have a great pool of resources because there's a large pool of people who have a high school diploma or higher, which is perfect for a call center, you know, right? You want somebody who has those kind of skill sets or has worked in the industry before, and because there's so many call centers you can pull from them. And then the other thing is their cost of living, the wages are far better than California. Cost of living and wages here are, you know, like everybody's going to say, they're horrible, but they're not like California. Obviously, California's much worse. Higher costs with lower wages comparables. And essentially, you are basically where you are in California. If you've got a call center in Arizona, you've got all the benefits of what you've got a call center in California as well. So that's why there's so many call centers in Arizona, is because it's time zone's great, resources to get the employees are great, and of course, cost is much better. Plus, building, I should add that, building giant buildings in Arizona is much cheaper than building in California. So because of some of the kickbacks and deals that Arizona gives big companies that build giant buildings. So, let's see. Dirt Racer X says, okay, so Unfreaking Believable and Dirt Racer X are saying that Fender is moving to Paradise Valley. A lot of you guys won't have a reference to that. That just means they're moving from one city to another city. That's what it means. The Fender's old building used to be on a reservation, and then they moved it to where they were currently now when they got the CEO that came from Guitar Center, and that's why they did that. And I thought that was a a bad move, but they really wanted him. I think that's why they moved, or he got him when he took power, he got them to move. Either way, I don't think it was a smart business move for that. And then of course he didn't stay anyways. They let him go or he quit. One of the things happens that both stories have been told, right? Okay. Like I said, this stuff sucks because there's just no reference unless you live in Arizona. Everybody's going to be like, I don't know what those places are you're saying. Jeremy says, what does Jeremy say? Jeremy says, Phil, it's time to change the power tubes in my Ibanez TA-15. Okay, oh, that's a good amp. Your opinion on sticking with 6V6s and 12X7s or try something different? So, couple things I need to say. First of all, Jeremy, please, you know, do whatever you like, but you did ask me, so for advice, you're going to get it. Here's the thing. When you say time to change your power tubes, you mean because they're bad or because you've deemed that they've been used too long? Every amp builder that I respect, whether that's Dave Freeman or John at Bad Cat Amps or, you know, I'm trying to think of just all of them, Mike Saldano, you name it, Tony Crank, right? Was named Tony Dow, but Tony Crank from Crank Amps, right? Every amp builder that I know has told me that you change the tubes when the tubes go bad. That's it. Like, there is no like, oh, my tubes have been in here and I've used it now for 10 years or I've had, none of them seem to apply to the theory of you change your tubes because they're old. You just change them when they don't work. So I just want to tell you that. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm telling you that when you hear that, I mean, none of those guys I just mentioned know each other. So like I said, that's what's interesting to me, right? When you have a guy who makes a blues amp and a guy who makes a metal amp and they don't know each other and they're giving you the same kind of tube information, you're like, oh, well, there must be something, right? There's something to it. So that's the first thing. Now, if you are changing it, because of course it's time to change tubes because you've blown a tube or you have, you know, right? You can, but me, I stick with whatever tubes are in there. I don't change things around, even though if some amps can change the tubes and do stuff. So my first piece of advice is don't change your tubes unless you have to. There is a theory out there. I've heard it so many times, like, oh, your tubes get old. If you put in new tubes, the amp's going to have more headroom. It's going to have this. Those tone differences are, again, those guys say they're minor. So I don't really mess with that. So, and like I said, this is so long ago, probably 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I went down a rabbit hole of, you know, messing with tubes and doing what everybody said. Oh, this 12, and my takeaway from it was, it's a cost efficiency thing for me. It's like what I was paying and what I was getting just, it wasn't making a lot of sense. You know, there was a point in my gear journey that I realized that I can't listen to rock stars because they have unlimited budgets. And so, I mean, they buy like, you know, when you see a rock star and they got four Ferraris and two giant monster trucks and, you know, four classic cars, and they're telling you about how they're going to only use this one tube. I'm like, that's not just because they're a musician. That's also because money is just water and they're just going to think like that. I'm never going to be in a situation like that. So everything has to have some practicality, as much as I passionately love this to the point where I would rather have an amplifier than an end table in my front room. There's still a point where I got to make decisions that make sense financially for myself. And that's one of them where I'm like, look, I'm not, you know, my amp sounds good. If I can make it sound 1% better with these better tubes, that doesn't convert to me in my mind. It has to be more than that. So I'm just going to let you know on that note right there. So, especially since another thing I hate about tubes is they're worth nothing once you buy them. Like, see, if I buy a pickup and I buy it for $100, it's worth 60, 70 bucks. It's worth something, right? So I feel like in my mind, if it doesn't work out and I change and I go down the journey, yeah, it cost me money, but it didn't cost me the whole thing. Tubes, I feel like I spend, you know, $200 for a set of tubes, whatever it costs, you know, right? You buy tubes and then you get them and you go, I don't know, it sounds a little different. And you're like, now they're worth nothing, right? Try to get somebody to buy your used tubes. It's tough. It's a tough sale. So that's another reason why I don't subscribe to that. But I wouldn't change the tubes unless there's something you don't like about the amp. But I, like I said, I don't do that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't mess with tubes. Every time you've heard me tell you guys that I've changed tubes, it's because I blew a tube. If you blow a tube, then you replace a tube or you take it to a tube repair center. Or not tube, you know, amp repair center and have them look at it. Okay. Somebody was talking about sponsorships too, like rock stars have sponsorships. Yeah, of course, that too, right? I mean, that's, you know, but even then, you know, I'm sure that's true, okay? That's true. But again, if you really follow, and just tell you what I said earlier about how no one really gives you anything, because it's very rare, okay? They trade you, they want something. That sometimes is the problem even for rock stars. You know, sometimes, I can't imagine they're going to be so disconnected for that it doesn't make sense to them. Sometimes when a company reaches out to me and they'll say, hey, if you make a video, we'll send you this pedal or this thing. And like I said, I'm like, well, the audience isn't looking for it. You guys don't even know this thing exists. You're not interested in the content. I'm not really interested in the product. And so I don't want to exchange hours and hours of my labor for this thing that I don't even want and that you won't watch. So that's, like I said, so to me, sometimes when somebody goes, oh, they send you something for free, I'm like, well, it was an exchange. And that's why I like to think of it that way. And that's why sometimes, you know, it's important to think like that. And especially if you start a small YouTube channel, start thinking like that right away. Because at first you think like everything is, oh, they sent this to me, so nice. But I'm telling you, it's a trade. And you need to think about that. You know, I look at it like if I'm a plumber and somebody's like, hey, I'll send you a guitar if you fix all the plumbing in my house. And if that makes sense, it makes sense. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. So, by the way, Ken and Bill, thank you for the super chats. Warren 5 says, hey, Phil, I'm a geeky crew, and I've been trying to get a KYG stand for a while. Shauna's been helping me, but it seems like I'm out of options. Will it ever be available internationally, members? Oh, one day. Yes. Okay, so when I'm saying yes, don't think I'm saying yes to that. The issue with the... So what he's asking about is the zither stands. The zither stands that are made with the KYG logo is shipped directly from zithers to you. That's why you guys get a little note from zither and stuff. This is because this is how they keep their cost down with shipping. They don't ship to us. And they currently do not ship internationally. So we did, I think Declan's got one. I can't remember. And he's in Ireland. And we've done a couple in the past where Shauna would order them, they would ship them to us, and then we would ship them to you guys. I guess, and I want to be very cautious how I say this, because I'm not committing myself to this, I'm committing Shauna to this, but I want you to tell you, look, the main reason we say we don't ship internationally, you know, for stuff like this, like any limited edition merch or stuff like that, is that the cost to what you get will never make sense. The cost of the customs fees, the shipping, it's just outrageous. And we just don't want to waste your time, you know, to say, oh yeah, we'll ship that hat or we'll ship that stand or we'll ship that to you. And then we're like, it's going to be $200 in shipping. And you're like, this is insane. I'm not doing that, right? Or what's worse is you get there in customs. And because remember, as people who live in the United States, we don't have those kind of fees. They don't really come to us like that. You guys have some astronomical fees, especially... I think you're in Korea, but like Europe and stuff like that, right? So my point is, and this is where I'm saying I'm trying not to be, I can't guarantee it, but I'm going to give you an idea. And this goes for anybody internationally. If you reach out to us, which is Sean and I, and you really, really want a piece of Know Your Gear merch that bad, it's not that we won't do it. It's just it's going to be psycho expensive for you because we're going to charge you whatever we have to pay. And sometimes that's crazy, especially since we're not a large business. We're a small business and we do get business rates, but we don't get high capacity shipping rates and stuff. So if you want to pay for it, the answer is not no. Because like I said, in fact, if I recall, you know what? Because everybody's names are wacky. Warren 5, I want to say... If you're who I'm thinking of, you're in Korea. And if you're in Korea, I believe Shauna just shipped you something and you're getting a prototype idea. And I wonder if you got it yet. So here's a cool idea. I don't know. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. I can hear her right now. I don't know if I should be telling you this. Hey, Shauna, if you're watching the show, she'll be in delay if she's watching the show. I was going to say, text me and tell me it's okay to share. We're working on an idea to ship stuff overseas when it comes to Know Your Gear merch. in kind of like a new way that will make it cheaper. I know I'm being vague. I shouldn't even talk about this stuff, but I'm just letting you know we are working on it. We're testing ideas, and I'm 90% sure, which is pretty sure, that she just shipped you something or shipped you something a while back that you're supposed to be getting that's going to help you fix some of these problems. So back to the stand with your issue. Thank you for the super chat and stuff. And the answer is yes. If you want a Zither stand, she'll get you one, but it's going to cost a fortune because it's got to ship from Zither to us because they don't do it. And then whatever it costs us to ship it to you, she's going to charge that. But keep it, you know, there you go. So that's the answer. That's the answer. And then anyone else has that problem, let us know too. We're working on it. That means it's tough. Clan of House Cats said, I sold my 68 reissue Gibson Les Paul custom 2 years ago. Found it on Reverb. Got it back. I had a situation like that. That's funny. Last week, won't part with it again. Don't sell your Les Paul. Yeah, don't ever sell your Les Paul. You know what happened to me was... I had my Rectiverb, somebody asked me a funny story. Somebody said, I made a comment. They didn't ask me. They put a comment. They're like, oh, you still have your Rectiverb, 25 by Mesa Boogie. And, what happened with me was I had it, loved it. I mean, I love that amp. I love my Rectiverb 25. It's one of my favorite amps of all time. And, had it for years and years and years on the channel, and then I sold it. The reason I sold it is because, you know, I have so many amps, and you're like, where do I stick all this stuff? And companies are sending amps for videos, and this stuff is gunking up. And so it's just one of those things. I sold it. And so I sold the amp. And like you, I probably regretted it a little bit. You know, I'm like, you know, such a good amp. I really enjoyed it. Why did I get rid of it? And then one day I was on Reverb. It wasn't the one, it wasn't mine. That wasn't the one I sold. But somebody was selling one for less than what I sold mine for. And so I was like, I gotta do it. So I bought it and I've had it ever since. And yeah, it's kind of funny. It was the only time that happened where I sold something. And then so when I bought it again, I actually like ended up netting like $100 like positive or $150 positive. But yeah, don't sell your Les Paul. Chris Goodwin says, on Kiesel's Wednesday stream, Jeff mentioned he'd like to invite you out for a Kiesel experience in January. Will you be there, able to make it? Oh, cool. I didn't know they were disclosing that. So remember, I don't get to talk to Jeff. You know, he's a busy guy and stuff. I usually talk to Brandon, who's the like marketing guy at Kiesel Guitars, and he reached out and asked me about that. If they're talking about it, I will talk about it, and I'll be as give you as much as I know. So Kiesel Guitars, I guess, is talking about doing an event in January during the NAMM show, and not the entire NAMM show, like one of the days. Like the NAMM is like the 25th to the 28th, right? Something like that. So it's like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and maybe Sunday. So I think they're going to do it one of those days. I think it's that Saturday. That makes sense. Let me look. I'll tell you since they talked about it. Yeah, it'll be that Saturday. Yes, I got an invite to come to it. And that's what I'm working on right now. So my answer is absolutely want to go. I want to be there at the event. I will be there. Why? To do what? I don't know. Look at Kiesel Guitars and hang out with people and talk guitar. Go there. But yes, absolutely. I'm trying to figure out my schedule to get it done. So the answer is yes. I want to go, and I'm trying to figure out how to go right now. That's it. So that's, yes, that's cool. And that's cool that they mentioned it. I didn't know that they were telling people, that about it. So that's cool. I'm excited. So yeah, I'm excited about it. And so, you know, I'm probably going to ask if they want, you know, if there's anything I can do, you know, right. Maybe if I could do maybe a clinic or something or anything, I would love to go there and do something, interact, something, anything. So, yeah, the answer is yes. Where? Let's see. I thought there was more to the question. Will you be able to make it? Yeah, I'm trying to make it right now. I'm working on it right now. So I even have Sean working on all my travel and stuff and doing all this stuff. So yes, I'm excited about it. And I'm glad I told everybody about it. I didn't know if they were going to tell everybody now or later. Brian says, does a retailer have any responsibility on a new guitar that needs a new nut? Has a sitar sound on the GBE strings after a proper setup? Okay, so that's a great question. Obviously, different laws, different states, different countries, okay? So everybody, everywhere is going to be different. I had a retail store in Arizona, which Arizona is a pretty common state. What it means by the laws in Arizona are very common to the other states in the union, so to speak. So you know, I can tell you that is what I'm going to tell you is pretty accurate. But of course, you know, if you're in England or somewhere else, it's, I don't know, right, what the rules are. The responsibility of a retailer is, when it comes to ethics, hold on, I'm getting a message too, and it might be important. So hold on. Oh, okay. So, okay. So can I tell them? Okay. So anyways, sorry, I got distracted, but, multitasking here. So the retailer's responsibility is of course an ethical responsibility, but it's important that the retailer is supposed to deliver what is promised. That really isn't essentially a guitar store thing. That's at every retailer issue. So obviously if they claim they sell you a new coffee maker, that coffee maker has to be new. It can't be a refurbished, right? They have a responsibility to deliver what they tell you. Okay. So if the product is described as new, it needs to be new in functioning condition, like they said. If a product is supposed to work and not be defective, right? Then yes. So in this case, your question is, does the retailer have a responsibility if your guitar has a sitar sound on the GBE and needs a proper, and it strings after a proper setup? Yes and no. Okay. First of all, this is where they all get loopy, right? They all like to lean into this, like I told you guys, and I've said many times in a lot of my videos, which is why I do these videos in the first place. They like to lean into the, well, you know, the guitar is fine, but it needs, you know, needs a setup, and you need to do that stuff, and it needs a proper setup and stuff. To me, a reputable retailer needs to make sure your guitar can play. I don't care what the guitar costs. That's the answer. The answer is, if you buy a $100 guitar, you buy a $10,000 guitar from a retailer, and I'm talking about new. I don't want to talk about 10 years from now. You bought it 10 years now, right? Relatively within a few months, right? They have a responsibility to help you make sure that guitar is performing as it's supposed to. A guitar is not supposed to sound like a sitar. I actually have a sitar and a guitar, and they sound much different. So if I had a guitar that sounded like a sitar, I would say that the guitar is not performing as needed. So first, when I say they have a responsibility, you're talking about, I don't want to confuse you with a legal responsibility. There's all kinds of, like, they can just, you know, say it's your problem. But a reputable retailer should be there to help you solve the problem. The problem with sometimes with retailers, and, you know, I was no different when I had a store too, right? Is that you're in the habit of selling, which means everything is about the new guitar, selling a customer the new guitar. But the reality is you figure out very quickly that when you start seeing, like when I started out selling guitars, I had no idea that I was going to be selling all the guitars to the same people. Like I told you, I didn't have retail experience. So I'd sell a guitar to somebody, and then a couple minutes later, they'd come back and buy another guitar. And then you buy another guitar. It was like Cheers. It's the same people drinking every night. Guitar stores, music stores are the same people. If you have a retail business in the music industry, you are going to sell most of your stuff to the same musicians over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Musicians are serial killers. There's never one's enough. Look at this is what the walls look like on most guitar players that are, you know, it's to some degree. So this is what I'm trying to tell you. They should be take care of you because that's their next sale is dependent on that, within reason. Now, I also, a music store is still people. And so I always remind you that if you go in and yell at people, they're not going to want to help you. Right. But if you are even tempered and you are polite and you have a reasonable request, which I think a reasonable request is the guitar should sound good, they should be there to help you. And if they can't help you, they should help. Cause I've had to do this. Look, let me just tell you some of the stuff I had to do, to help somebody with a guitar like that. I've had to set it up and cut a new nut. Right. And, you know, in my head, was I cursing you? Yeah, now I could say it. Yeah, I was cursing you. I was like, man, this guy, by the time I cut the nut and put this in, I was only making $320 on the guitar. This is an hour and a half labor. I'm only gonna make $150. I'm busy. I don't have time for this. That's just in my head. You didn't hear any of that. I didn't say it to you. I just said, here's your guitar, man. How do you like it? Oh, Phil, thanks. And I'm like, all right. And then when you leave, I don't consider myself a religious person, but I go, God, please let that guy come back and spend some money because, man, did I get screwed on that deal, right? That's what owning a business is like. It's mentally cursing the customers in your head and doing the right thing and then hoping that it not only, because it works out for you, then it works out for me later, and it's not a one time only. So my and what I learned, thank God, was that that's what happens. The majority of them come back. Majority of customers come back. Sweetwater gets it. They get that concept too. You know, a lot of people complain about Sweetwater, but on their volume, their complaints are almost non-existent because in the internet game, they figured it out. So basically your scenario, I think they should help take care of you. I think you should get that's what I think they should do. And if they don't, sad thing is you're going to have to fix it on your own, but you know, never to go back to them again. Don't forget also you have warranty too. So you also have to see what the warranty on that guitar is. So the only caveat to that is used guitars are a little tricky, right? This is another thing I never really enjoyed. I don't enjoy it as a customer and I enjoy it as a store, which is the whole, you buy a guitar and then you go, oh, here's a problem with it. And they go, it looks like you need a setup. And then you pay for a setup. And, you know, you're like, well, I was hoping it was going to play great when I bought it. That's what I paid for. They need to take care of you. So like I said, so here's another important thing. Things that you can do to make sure that happens. Like I said, be a reasonable person with reasonable requests. Okay. So the first thing is you reasonably request that, hey, this guitar has a setup. Like I said, whether you did the setup or not, don't feel bad. If you did the setup, that's fine. Obviously, you and the store's goal should be the same, which is you both want you to have a nice guitar. Okay. That is how it's supposed to work. And so if you say, look, the guitar has the problem GB&E, they have a sitar effect. I need that corrected. How do we make that happen? Right. And that's your reasonable request. Now, what you're hoping is they're going to say, let us take a look at it. We can fix it easily and get it right for you. We're going to take care of it on our own. If it's a big problem, you're going to have to pay a little bit. And that's where you have to be reasonable too, because again, maybe, and reasonable, like if they say, hey, normally it's $70 to do the setup, we're going to charge you $35, half the rate. You know, you'll have to decide if you want to do business with them again, right, after that. But I mean, that's a reasonable, like I said, because again, the goal is to get your guitar right. Me personally, I think most stores should try to get you a perfect guitar without, you know, having compromise. I don't know. Anyone got thoughts on that? I never know sometimes. One of my problems is I do all my own work. So even when stores, like if I get a guitar and it's a little jacked up, like setup wise, I don't want them to do setup because I've been doing setup for 20 years. I want to do my own setup. But what I'll do is I just constantly go like, hey, I'll do the setup on this. It's a little jack. Can we get $10 off? Or can I get a tuner or something? I don't know. So let's see. Okay. All right. Next one. Next. How are we doing time? Well, we're doing good. Okay. And sometimes I don't know. We have Happy Go Lucky says, planning to route the neck pickup cavity for a humbucker on my Tele. Any suggestions, tips for the first time router? Yeah, do it on a different piece of wood first. If you've never, look, the issue is not the Tele. The issue is the router. If you've never used a router before, they can move in a way that's just unpredictable to you, right? It's really easy, like anything. You learn how firm or light to hold them, where to let them kind of move and where to guide them, right? The other thing is, if you've never done it before, what you really want to do, especially because you said a Telecaster, if it's painted or not, you want to observe the area you're going to route first and make sure that there may be not any knots in the wood. Sometimes routers, when they hit a knot, man, they just jump, and it's pretty harsh if you've never done it before. The first couple times it happens to you, maybe the first time, second time gets a little like, whoa. And after that, it's not easier. It's just, you know, it's, you know, you know what it feels like when it hits it. You know, there's a difference between when it jumps and versus when it's just moving a little bit. What's great about it, Tele is a perfect guitar to do that too, because everything you're going to be doing is going to be hidden under a pick guard. So whatever little mess you make, it's, you know, you're going to be fine because you get to cover it up with a piece of plastic. So I would just, like I said, practice with the template. Also, I would make sure you have a template. You can buy templates pretty inexpensively. I like templates, like I said. I wouldn't freehand it. If you're going to freehand it, because some people do that too, if you're going to freehand it, make sure you, I would use a Dremel, you know, and just go slow, you know, something like that. But if you have the router and you can do it, like I said, the only thing I suggestion I have is definitely do it on a piece, try routing on a piece of wood first, get a sense of the tool first. In other words, get a feel for the tool before you use the tool. The guitar itself is not going to be the problem. There you go. Grumpy My Guitar says, new guitar day for me today. What do you get? What'd you get? He goes, I got a Dano 59. Asked my Sweetwater guy for a deal and got a really nice discount. This is definitely the time to ask for deals. You know, did anyone, I wanted to share this with you. We were talking about the market softening and all the deals on Reverb. You know what happened to me this week that shocked me was I needed some strings for a guitar. And so I went on Sweetwater, picked the strings, clicked it. They were $6.99 for the set. Looked at it and thought, oh crap, it probably won't get here until tomorrow afternoon or the next day. And I go, I'm just going to go to a local store. So I went down to the local store the next morning and I got the strings. And that afternoon or later that night, Sweetwater sent me an email saying, you left these strings in your cart. We'd like to give you $2 off. Has anyone had that? So basically what I'm saying is, if you have something that you like, I'm just giving you a suggestion. If you have something that you're maybe interested in at Sweetwater, maybe it might be worth loading it in your cart and waiting a day or two to see if Sweetwater emails you, because that was a pretty, $2 off $7 is a pretty aggressive discount. And it wasn't a percentage they offered me. It was two physical dollars off the strings. So that would mean they would have shipped those strings to me for $4.99 free shipping. It's pretty crazy. So same thing, you might want to throw those in the cart. But, or you can just call your Sweetwater guy and gal and say, hey, give me a discount and see what they say. But they're probably going to say yes, especially now. But back to Grumpy My Guitar. So I'm glad you got a Dano 59. As you know, it's one of my favorite guitars. I have one right there. It's the three pickup one. We're going to be giving one of those away, I think. I think that's what we're working out for December is a Dan Electro guitar giveaway. This is also a good time to mention, if you didn't see it in the link, I should tell you now, especially if you go to the link of this video, you can enter to win a Loudbox Micro, like that one right there for my video this week. I was able to get a Fishman to give us an amp to give away. So we're going to be giving that amp away. I like doing the giveaways. It's really fun for me. I hope it's fun for you guys. It's really cool. And the main reason I do it is because I think the companies will do it, and why not? I know only one person gets something, but one person has a great day, and it doesn't cost us, well, it just costs us shipping. Mr. G says, used COVID era Gibson SG specials are going for near new price. Why is this? If I'm only saving $100, I don't know. I haven't seen that. It could be because they don't make, SG specials. Could be because they're not making those specific colors or specific models that way. You know, people are very specific. Guitar players are very specific of what they want. And so it could be that. I'm just giving a guess. I haven't seen that. I haven't, so you know, Mr. G, I haven't seen a market of anybody trying. I see people asking prices, but I don't see right now anyone getting high dollar for their product, their guitars. I said this a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago. The market's softening. It's definitely softening. And that if you have to sell some of your gear, because you have to, especially high-end gear, I understand, but you understand you're giving a deal now, right? Unless you're going to wait, okay? You want to wait months and months for that one player to finally pull the trigger for what you got. If you got something cool or rare, it'll happen. But this is not the time to do it. I'm not saying years from now. I'm not saying anything other than right now you are what the market is. In other words, you're competing with the people you're competing with. And right now the retailers are dumping. So you have to deal with retailers. They have an incentive to thin down this the products, the gear, the guitars, the amps, the pedals. So used is competing with new. It's really tough, right? Think of this, not guitar related, okay? I'm looking at a Christmas present for a friend. It just happens to be a very expensive one. And at least it feels very expensive. And it's, you know, I've been looking, right? You're looking for a deal or, you know, hey. And ironically, just the other day, I found a store that had it for a pretty deep discount, like 35, 40%. You never see this on sale. 30%, 35%, maybe 30%. And they were listed as refurbished. And I was like, oh, I don't want to buy a refurbished one for a gift. That's a joke. And they're like, they have 25 of them in stock. I'm like, how do they have 25 refurbished? I go, I wonder if this is like the guitar world where they just list stuff as demo and stuff. Did a little research and found out this is exactly what happens. That's how they're violating their MAP. So it's their offset. They're selling a lot of stuff right now. This is not the time to sell gear, especially high-end gear, if you don't have to. Again, if you have to, you have to. I mean, I get it. I've been there too. There are guitars I've sold in times that I'm like, man, wish I would've got top dollar. So you guys know, I think about making this video. I don't know. Do you think I should make a video? From time to time, when I say time, maybe once or twice a year, I buy a collection of guitars. But this is different. So, you know, I'm not talking about like how a music store buys, you know, if you're going to sell off your offset, sell your collection of guitars to a store and they buy it all, right? And they can flip it and sell it. Okay. And there's tons of videos like that where stores are like, we bought all this, you know, this guy's stuff and we're going to sell it. And there are flippers, right? I mean, there's a lot of YouTube channels where they flip stuff, right? And they're pretty upfront about it. Kyle Bull's a good channel and he talks about amps and he buys and flips amps, right? At least that's my understanding talking to Kyle. And same with Trogly, right? Like although you're like, wow, that collection of guitars is crazy. I mean, he's flipping that stuff, right? That's inventory for him. He's buying and selling. So he's flipping the majority of it. So when I say I buy collections of guitars, like I just recently bought a collection in the last couple of weeks. I'm not buying it to flip it. I'm buying it for a different reason. When this happens, you got to understand, I am a guitar crazy enthusiast, regardless of player, guitar repair guy, all those things are fine. But I am a guitar enthusiast. Like I'm really into guitar. So that being said, there are guitars, especially guitars that I've wanted my whole life or guitars that I just want. And they're really, you know, they just fixate in my brain. I can't sleep. I can't, you know, I got to think about them all the time, being sarcastic. And sometimes you come across them and it happens to me. It's happened a couple times. And it's a couple, like I said, usually about once a year, once every other year, somebody has something I really want. And the problem is they don't want to sell that because that's like the jewel of the crown jewel of their collection. Because they want to sell all their other ones, right? I've done the same thing. It's a good advice. There's two reasons why I'm telling this story. One, it's good advice. It's the advice it took the longest for myself to learn, which is let's say you have 5 or 10 guitars and you love 2 of them more than anything and you need to sell off a couple guitars and you can't get top dollar for the other guitars and they're not very, they're not very exciting because they're not selling for top dollar. And so you always sell off the nicer guitars because that's what you can sell faster and for a better price. And what I've learned is that's the worst thing you do because then you just stuck with the guitars that nobody wants and you don't want them either. So, a lot of times what people will do is like, hey, I'm either selling all of this, okay, this happens a lot, or I'm only selling the crown jewel. Now, in this particular case, this isn't what happened. This was one of those where the guitar I wanted, the price is high, right? And he wasn't asking a high price. It's just the price is high. And so what happens sometimes, I've told you guys many stories about taking trades and doing trades and how I've done trades and how I currently do trades. Sometimes it's like, I guess for a lack of a better way to explain this, imagine if you had 5 cards and 1 card is worth $10 and you're like, that's a lot of money. All I got is $20. You can go, okay, I can't, if I give this guy $10, his card is too much, but you can go, you know what? What if I give him $15 or whatever? What if you give them all $20 for the 5 cards, but now you can sell off the cards you don't want and get $15 back and you only paid $5 for that card. So that's what I just did recently with the collection. I bought a collection of guitars because I was after 1 or 2 of those specific guitars and I paid a lot of money for the collection, but it's because when the dust all settles, I will have paid less than I can find anywhere else for the core guitars. The reason I'm telling you stories, one, it's just it's guitar stories to tell, but two, I never make a video about that. I just never knew what to do. I never, do I make a video called I Bought a Guitar Collection and this is it and I just go through it? If you guys think it'd be interesting, and you understand, I'm not talking about, I want to be very clear, I'm not talking about a video about like, I bought a And I mean no disrespect to anybody. Like, I bought this Harley Benton and a Squire. I'm talking about, like, these are guitars. All of these guitars are very unique, crazy guitars that you usually would never see. Because that's where if you want, you know, that's why these guys sell their collections. They usually have, they've used a curated, right, a bunch of really interesting and unique and, you know, expensive type guitars. So, so there you go. Let me know. I'll do the video. I'll just title it like, I bought a guitar collection and this is why, right? And then I'll do the video and I'll go through them all and explain it. So, and all of them are cool. I thought about just taking pictures of them and throwing them on my Instagram and stuff. But I don't know if that's, somebody says a guitar haul. It's like a guitar haul. And I've never done them this whole time. I always do them every couple of years, I buy a bunch of guitars. And most of them I keep, some of them I get rid of. But it, like I said, it's not a monetary thing. It's more of a just, you know, something beautiful on the wall. And then usually what you guys see is the one guitar I was after later. And you go, how did you get that? And I go, oh, that's how I got it. So here's what's funny. Watch this. I have no idea. My Renabine, and I'm messing up their name, says it's hard to make content on that without risking being accused of taking advantage of people. This is why maybe I should do this video. So I want to be very clear. I did not buy gear like a store buys gear. Look, I had a store, okay? So I had to buy gear like a store. I was very nice, probably nicer than most stores in my area, but I was still a store, right? I was still making profit. I wasn't, don't get me wrong. There was no like, let's see, I'll give you six and I'll sell it for $650. I mean, we still had to make money. I don't buy these collections as a store to flip them. I'm not a gear flipper. I'm not buying gear to then flip it for profit. I'm not trying to profit. In fact, never once in this entire collection did I conceive, think, or even want to make even break even. What I'm trying to do is, like I said, is instead of spending a lot of money for one guitar, I'm trying to buy a whole collection, sell off a couple things I don't need of that collection. And then when you average it out, I didn't pay as much for those guitars. That person is fine. Plus, I always do this, as you guys know, I talk about a podcast, but it's also a video on my second channel, which is, anyone that I'm doing this with is usually somebody I know to some degree, because I know a lot of guitar players in my area. That's what happens when you work on their guitars for decades. I always have a buyback clause. So the person who sold me these guitars has a clause. The clause is real simple. If I ever go to sell any of the pieces, even the pieces I think like, oh, that's the ones I'm going to get rid of first, they're offered back to that person at the same price they paid me. I've always done that. So this is different. And so, you know, this is why people would sell me their collections. That's why I buy these collections. These are kind of like, let me give you an example. These are kind of deals where they would go to a music store and maybe get offered, you know, $5,000 for all these guitars. I'm just throwing numbers. And I come in and I'm not going to pay double, because that's what, of course, that's the retail. That's what those stuff would sell. But I'm going to pay much higher than the retail store would ever consider paying. And I'm going to give you like a buyback clause. So if you ever go to sell them, I'll give you first right of refusal. So yeah, this is definitely not one of those. I'm not worried about that in any way, shape, or form. So in fact, in this particular case, this is a little different case than the other ones. In this particular case, this person is actually a good friend. And I know what he paid for every single guitar, and he made money on every single guitar. So, you know, and that's how we calculated it. I was like, I knew exactly what he paid for all those guitars over the years, and I gave him more than what he paid. So he netted positive. He made money. And although he could have got more money if he sold them one by one, to some, you know, on reverb and stuff over time, just having somebody, you know, buy it all in one lump sum, just make, like I said, he paid a convenience price, basically, is what it is. I paid the convenience price. Alan says, how many guitars consults a collection? That's a good, see, maybe that's part of the video too, because here's my question to you. In this case, it was six guitars, right? Six guitars in this collection. I've bought bigger ones, you know, like 20 guitars and 15 guitars and 10 guitars for sure in collections. But again, I'd like to point out, let's so you guys all understand, when I say collection, you know, six guitars, it's not like two Squires, a Fender American Strat, you know what I mean, and a Schecter. This is like custom shop, PRS, private stock, you know, custom shop, you know, not made anymore, blah, 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 one of a kind, this, right? So, I mean, it's stuff that, you know, it's, trust me, it's tough. So there you go. It was funny, it's unfreaking believable. Funny story. You said, hey, Phil, let me know when you sell those Parkers. Every Parker I own, every single one, is on a buyback clause. I don't know if any of my friends would buy them back, the ones that sold them to me over the years, but all of them are on a buyback clause. So it would be, it's like, that's where that stuff usually goes. Like if I decided selling the Parkers, I send out a text or an email to whoever I bought it from and said, hey, I'm gonna let it go. And this is the price. And so, you know, most of the time you hope that they don't buy it back because it's worth more than what you paid. But, you know, that's just how we do it. My friends do it to me. I do it to them. It's just how we found to be fair to each other. It's also how we can give each other deals. Because one of the parts, I think that's what I talk about in that video. One of the tough parts about buying and selling guitars with your friends is you want to give your friend a deal, but also you don't want to cheat yourself out of money. So sometimes a buyback deal is a great deal if you have a good friend, you know, if you have ethical friends like that, where you're like, hey, I'll sell you this guitar. You know, like I sold Ralph like a really amazing V guitar, Gibson, for like, I don't know, $1,000 or $900 or something like that. And it's worth really good money. And same thing, like if you ever decide to get rid of it, which Ralph doesn't get rid of anything, he, you know, hey, I'm going to sell it. You know, do you want it? And, you know, that's what's great. So that's why we do that. Because it's a great way to say, hey, look, you know, give me a deal, but, you know, you not getting screwed, because if I ever get rid of it, you're going to get right back. And sometimes it happens that way. So there you go. All right. We got another question. We got the next subject. And then, like I said, let me know in the comments if you think that's a video worth doing, if you find it interesting and this kind of discussion in the video interesting. Or just throw up cool pictures of the guitars on Instagram. Litvay, thank you so much for the super sticker. I appreciate that, man. Okay. And are we done? Are we wrapped up? I think we hit everything. Let's see if I can find. DC Mabon. Oh, man, I'm sorry, guys. Just letters to me. DC Mabon said, are you going to do any videos of those guitars you got? That would be cool. If I did it, I would do the collection video. I mean, I don't know what a video of those guitars would be, because they're, again, these aren't guitars that you can. Two or three of them you can't buy. Like, I mean, you can't find them anywhere. So if I do a video of them, it's not going to help you guys. You can't physically find these. One's a one of a kind, and one's a one of a one of two ever made. And then two of the other guitars aren't made anymore. And then the one you guys can find right now, I don't know if you, that would be, I think, probably the least interesting one. So I think it's, like I said, is entertainment value. I think the entertainment would be to see the guitars in a video maybe, and then hear the discussion of this kind of things. Because like I said, I know you guys see it. I see videos all the time. I watch videos all the time of, like, you know, guitar stores doing a haul, you know, where like they go to vintage, trade shows and buy guitars, or you see like guys buying and flipping guitars. But I don't think you actually get to see guitars, being bought for the sake of, like, no, I'm someone who loves the guitars, like the person selling them, and I want them. And, you know, this isn't about, like, oh, you need $50 really bad, huh? Right? It's not that kind of deal. So there you go. Like I said, I'll probably do the video. I think it sounds cool. I've never, like I said, I always kind of think, why didn't I do them in the past? Okay. And then also, let's see. All right. And then real quick, just a reminder, you can enter the contest. That's a highlight. Next week we're going to do the Black Friday. I'm going to reveal new products, that are coming out. So that'll be cool. And then of course we'll be doing the Stu Mac Plus deal for you guys. And I think I hit all the subjects and questions I saw. like looking. This is when I go, oh, I forget to, aha, see, I knew Amanda was going to be on top of stuff and sending me questions and I wasn't paying attention. So let me grab a couple. This is how we'll end the show. We'll grab a couple of the questions Amanda highlighted. B King Mac says, Big King Mac, that's what I'm going to say. Big King Mac says, have you used super glue to raise a nut slot or to fix a slot that is cut too wide? Yeah, I use baking soda and super glue to do that. I have a video on that and how I do it. But yeah, it's a really common trick that works. I mean, baking soda and super glue, man, once it hardens, it's like hard as a rock. So really good. The other one came from By Grace, I'm Saved. It says, hey, Phil, what do you recommend when filing nuts but don't have the exact size nut file? So I've done tricks, like I said, where I've shown you can take the guitar string and wrap some like 400 grit or higher. Sometimes you can get away with 300, maybe. Yeah, 400 grit's where I like, though. Sandpaper, you wrap around a string. I've done it both ways, and so you know, both ways meaning if, let's say, I'm going to do a 12-gauge nut slot, I've used a 12-gauge string and wrapped the sandpaper around it and done it, and it was fine. And I've done where I've used a lighter gauge, maybe like 11 or 10-gauge, and then done it, and it worked fine. Both ways work fine. It just depends on how aggressive you're being with it. So, yeah, you can do that as well. I do not like those cheap Amazon torch cleaner things, right? The pipe cleaner things are junk. I hate those. So that's, you know, so yeah, you can do that as well. I like that technique. And that's a technique that it's worked well for me, and that's why I've used it. This one was from an anonymous user. Great sign on. How would you set up a 7-string guitar action wise? I'd set it up exactly the same way as you do a 6-string. There's no real difference. You only have one string that's different. And in my experience, the mass, the thickness, and the mass, the width, and just the overall thickness, girth, whatever you want to call it, of the neck is so much more substantial on the 7-strings that you don't have to worry about the extra tension added from the 7th string. It works great. So I set it up exactly the same. Now, the only thing I can tell you about my 7-strings personally is I use 9s and 10s on my guitars, 9-gauges and 10-gauges, and hybrids, of course, depending on the guitar. Like I always say, the guitar picks the strings, not the player, you know, just what works for the guitar best. In my experience, I like 9-gauge 7-strings for my 7-strings pretty consistently. I don't think I have a single 7-string that has 10s on it. So that helps. And then here's another one real fast. I don't know. The question was, what file do I use for filing an acoustic guitar nut? I use the StuMac nut slot files that I've had forever. So, yeah. Most likely it's plastic nut. It's a little tight on the strings, or a bit hard to tune. So one of the things you can do, and that's why I do those in those videos, you can lubricate that nut slot and see if that helps the string. That's the first thing that you can do. Is pretty easy. The second thing you do is exactly what I said. You can take a light piece of sandpaper, 400 grit or higher, and you can, without even a string, you know, down it like I do in the videos, you can just lightly sand, you know, fold it in half and just lightly sand in there. Because again, you're just trying to clear up any debris, especially plastic. You understand, one of the things that sucks about soft materials for a nut is not just the tone aspect. The issue is that the string is essentially a saw, okay? Especially, you know, wound strings, right? So they kind of bite in, and if they do a sloppy job on the nut, especially a plastic nut, they have all kinds of barbs and pieces there, and that stuff is binding up. You want this, remember, the perfect scenario is that the slots in the nut are super smooth. That's why we want to lubricate them, because if we can't get super smooth, we want to just add something that's going to do that. So definitely lubricate the nut slots or smooth out the nut slots, and you don't have to worry about cutting new nut slots. That sometimes fixes the problem more than ever before, especially newer guitars. And when a guitar comes in new, remember, they run through that stuff really fast, especially if the guitar is not a super expensive guitar. This one said, oh, that's the next one. And then let's see. Phil, what do you know about ProSonic Fender amps? So ProSonic amps, I really like. The ProSonic was Bruce Zinke designed that amp. It's the precursor to the Supersonic. I currently have a Supersonic. I've had a lot of people mention over the years, like, oh, if you like the Supersonic, Phil, you like the ProSonic. I own the ProSonic. Here's the issue with ProSonic for me. To me, the ProSonic gain is high gain. It's like a Soldano. It's way more saturation than the Supersonic. Although I like that, and I like the ProSonic, here are my issues. The ProSonic, like the first Supersonic head, doesn't have reverb. So the ProSonic head doesn't have reverb. That's what I love about having the Supersonic head, is it has reverb. The original Supersonic 60-watt head did not have reverb, only the combo did, just like the ProSonic. So the thing I don't like about the ProSonic head is it doesn't have reverb. The combo, the ProSonic combo, has reverb. However, it's like a 210, I think, and I'd rather have a 112. So that was the other thing, because to me, that amp being so high gain and having 10-inch speakers, it's a lot of fizz. But the biggest issue with the ProSonic for me is that when I thought about buying one, I didn't. And then when I was going to actually pull the trigger, they had jumped up in price quite a bit. I mean, you used to get them for nothing. Now people kind of know about them because of the internet. We all talk about them stuff. But the ProSonic was a great amp. And Bruce Zinke actually lives in Arizona. At least he did for the longest time when he owned Supro. We used to be a dealer for him. We did Zinke amps and we did Supro when Bruce Zinke owned Supro. And before he sold it off, or whoever he sold it to. Yeah, he sold it off. But yeah, the ProSonic, great amp. It's a great amp. Let's just start there. It's a great amp. I just prefer the Supersonic. When I say prefer, this is where, again, function over form. I don't know if that's the right way to say that this time, but it's basically like I'm looking at it right now, the Supersonic. It's just Supersonic has more bells and whistles to what I like, even though I think the ProSonic's a slightly better amp. I have no idea. FUFCJ. Sorry, man. I tried. Says, hey, Phil, getting guitar for a 5-year-old daughter. Thought about Squire Mustang. Body felt too big. Smaller alternatives. 5-year-old. So this is what's great. So let me just tell you the way you want to think about your child. 6 years old and under. 6 years old and under. Don't get them a guitar, okay? Get them either ukulele, okay, or a piano. At that age, a piano is a fantastic first instrument. Now, I understand if they want a guitar. They're like, I want a guitar. Okay, I get that, okay? But I'm talking about if you want to get them into music, it's your desire to put music in them, and they're not coming to you, definitely consider the piano. The piano is the in my opinion, is the best foundation instrument ever. It is very rare you find a guitar player who is not good if they start on piano. The way the piano laid out is beautifully, right? All your whole notes are white keys. All your flats and sharps are black keys. It's a perfect way of, especially for a child to look at it. What's great also about pianos is they scale because they're electric, with no issues whatsoever. See, when you scale down a guitar, you have to deal with the fact that it's more cost effectively made. So therefore, the quality goes down. The frets are worse. The strings are garbage. You got to do all the setup work. You got to get this smaller guitar to play right, and be right, and sound right. Where a keyboard, when you shrink it, it's essentially the same thing, right? So you can buy a keyboard for their hands perfectly, and what's great about keyboard is generally all they're doing is shrinking the scale, right? Not scale like scale model, but the music scale down. So you're just losing some of the lower notes and higher notes, which is fine. So it gets some easy playing to go. That's what I highly recommend, piano first, if you can do that. If they really want a guitar and they're 5 years old, okay? And age is a hard thing to talk about, because when I would say age, like 6 years old and below, I'm talking about height and hand size, okay? We really care about that more than their age, okay? Really, kids today are so much smarter than kids 30 years ago. You know, right now somebody's cursing at me for saying that, but it's true. They just learn at a different rate than they used to learn. Basically, that's why I like the piano, but also, like I said, their hand size and their height are another concern with guitar. That's why an ukulele is great. And I've said this before, you can capo your guitar and essentially you play along on the ukulele and they're learning songs, they're playing. And to them, they're playing guitar. Okay. They really don't understand. At 5, 6 years old, they're not going, oh, this isn't a guitar. An ukulele is a guitar. It's just a small guitar. And it sounds good. And it's fun. And there's great songs. You know, teach them the Beatles. Ukulele, however you want to say it. Beatles songs, are fantastic to play. You can play Happy Birthday. It's really fun. Now, we talked once about these new 3-string guitars, whatever they call these, the Lug guitars. I don't know anything about them. Like I said, that's why I recommend what I know. I don't know how to recommend things I just saw an infomercial on Instagram or whatever. But people really praise the Lug guitars in the comment section when I talked about them. So you can always look into that, but I can't give you any reference to that. But that's what I recommend. Also, what's nice about ukulele is that once she's playing it, when she transitions to her first guitar, which will probably be a half size or 3/4 at that point, like I said, everything transfers over. You know, the finger work, you know, the scale, the chords will be slightly different, but not really, kind of, you know what I mean? It's all, so that's what I recommend. That's where I would take it. And then cost-wise, way easier. You can buy a nice small keyboard and a nice ukulele for a fraction of what a small guitar costs at that age. So there you go. Like I said, if you want to start their journey, and when I give you this advice, I'd like to point out, because I want you to know where it comes from. I know sometimes I say it all the time. Like, I had a store for over a decade. I had a retail store. Again, that's just where I'm trying to cite my resource information from. But more importantly, my wife and I ran a lesson academy for all that time too. Like I said, 12 years. And we documented everything. The failure, the success of all the students. We basically, when students left, we asked them to give exit surveys when they would. My wife documented everything. We put it in stuff because we wanted to do the best job we could for not only for our teachers, or for our students. And the advice I'm giving you is what we learned when we saw success versus failure in kids and in adults, right? So this is what, you know, being around that environment for, you know, a huge chunk of my life taught me. And this is why, like I said, this is why I recommend it. It's because you will find better success with that. And like I said, they'll have a blast. And just teach them the first thing, and then we'll end on this note because it's a great note to end with Start Your Weekend. The best thing you can do for a child is teach them to have fun with music. In my experience, if they equate fun and music together, it's easy after that. It's just easy. It's going to be easy. And one of the funnest things to do in music is to play songs, play music. Right? It is not fun to sound horrible. So, like I said, if you can teach them and give them the fundamentals, plus, like I said, music theory is so great on the piano. So amazing. So, like I said, that's your two options, ukulele or piano. I would recommend that over one of those small half-size guitars that you're just going to be spending all your time trying to get to play right. Also, keep in mind weight, too, as well. Dads were horrible at buying the first guitars for kids because we're usually the gear people. Mini electric guitars are not the best thing to start on for kids. Keep in mind, most mini guitars, and I've done videos, and I have videos on my channel about how to set up a mini guitar and why I select the ones I do. Like, I like the Jackson ones, I like the Ibanez ones, the Micro series and stuff. But one thing I always want to remind you guys that we used to have to tell people all the time is a mini electric guitar is 7 to 8 pounds, and so is a gallon of milk. I want you to picture your 5-year-old daughter picking up a 8 pound gallon of milk and then holding it and playing it. It's not a fun experience for them. So like I said, keep the instruments light, keep it fun, keep them playing music, and that's what I recommend. And on that note, we'll say goodbye. I want to thank you guys so much for hanging out. As always, you guys are awesome. And like I said, put a comment and a thumbs up if you like the video, but more importantly, if you think I should do that collection video, and I'll knock that out. Maybe that'll be a video for next week. And then, of course, I have some other review videos and stuff coming. And as always, thank you so much for your time. Oh, I got to say
The Know Your Gear podcast.
All right. And on that note, I'll let you go, and I'll see you next week. I did all that, and I'm not even on the right screen to exit the show. Ah, here it is. See? Such a professional environment around here. All right, guys. Bye-bye.